Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Listening to The V-Show on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, in for Bob Valvano, it's Jeff Greer.
You're selling yourself short there, Nick, by not playing your own name in the rejoins there. But nevertheless, if you are interested, we got a bunch of different pregame or postgame shows. Excuse me, we got live broadcasts of college basketball all through the weekend. The Miller Lite Louisville postgame show is coming up on Saturday. First place to talk about the Cards after every game. Louisville hosting Detroit Mercy, or just Detroit. Mike Davis coming back to the area with his superstar son Antoine Davis. Join Steve Rummage Sunday or Saturday around 4 p.m. as we're the first place to take your calls, texts, and hear live from Mike Pegues, all right here on 93.9 The Ville. Kentucky basketball is back in action, as we mentioned earlier, hosting Ohio on Friday night. That's actually a sneaky fun opponent. Obviously, Kentucky will be favored and expected to win, but Ohio's a good team, and we're the first place to talk about the Cats after every game, too. Join James Strebel and Jason Enns Friday night around 9 p.m. as we're the first place that will take your calls, texts, and hear live from John Calipari. If it's Kentucky basketball, we talk about it here, ESPN 680, 105.7, and the ESPN Louisville app. And I'd be remiss if I left out Bellarmine at Gonzaga. The Knights continue their West Coast trip Friday night at top-ranked Gonzaga. Pregame coverage begins at 8:45, tip-off at 9 on 93.9 The Ville and the ESPN Louisville app. Jeff Greer, Nick Valvano here with you. I am out at the Kentucky Derby Museum for NWSL Championship Media Day coming up in a little less than 2 hours, but Nick, you had an idea that you sprung on me here about 3 seconds before the music started playing again. So what is it? What's V-Stakes? I don't know anything about this.
Come on, play. There it is. All right, so during the commercial break, right before we got one Kent Spencer on, Johnny Sales is in the building, so it's always a pleasure seeing Johnny Sales. He tells me that there is a horse running in Aqueduct because the top, like the lead story on DRF, Daily Racing Forum page, said that Nikki the Vest is making a return after like 3 years or something like that. So he's in the third race at Aqueduct. So, third race at Aqueduct is going off in about 10 minutes. That'll lead us right up until we get Lara Overton on, more or less. We're about 8 minutes to post, by the way. So I figured this would be a great time. I want to see if Nikki the Vest, it's very close to Nikki the Boot, if he can, get the job done. So I figured we'd do a makeshift V-Stakes here. And you've never done a V-Stakes before, so we're breaking your maiden. There you go.
Oh, God.
So I'm going to shoot through these odds real fast.
Okay.
All right. And then, text those in, 437-9680, UPS Jobs text line. We'll get you a wonderful V-Show prize pack, and it'll actually be a good one. We'll have some AL8 in there, some ESPN Louisville swag, and maybe a gift card to Mill and Tony's, so we'll see. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line. Text in your picks. We'll shoot right through these real fast. You got about 8 to 10 minutes to post. Vintage Hollywood going off at 45-1, long shot. Kaz's Beach, 30-1, also kind of a long shot. Microscope, 35-1. Thorny Tail, he's the even money favorite. He's the fourth horse. Ruben Silvera, That's his pony. We have Durkin's Call. That's the expert's pick on that one, and I like
okay.
that. I'm assuming that's after who's the Tom Durkin. There we go. I kept saying Tim Durkin because I grew up with a Tim Durkin. Tom Durkin. I kind of like that name. I'd probably put money on him if it wasn't for Nicky the Vest. He's coming in at 7-2. He's the 7 pony. Oh, I passed over Prince of Pharaoh. Sorry. He's I believe he's 35-1.
Wow.
The 6 horse, and then we rounded out with Troubleshooter, 30-1.
Interesting. Okay.
So text in your choice.
And I wish I had the racing sheet in front of me. I would at least make an educated guess. I kind of want to be all in on Nicky the Vest. I pull for my guy. I try to coach you through, to harness your talent during softball season by setting your feet, making the throws with the noodle you've got. And you started to really turn into a superstar on the gas bags. By the end of the season, you are our key guy.
Well, I appreciate that. Finally started.
I'll take full credit for the coaching.
No, absolutely. You got to coach him up a little bit. You got to love him up, and that's what you did. And I definitely responded for sure. We need to bring the gas bags back. But again, those choices. I think I read the wrong odds, by the way. Sorry. Of course I did.
Yikes.
So we'll shoot through those again. Number one, Vintage Hollywood. That's the expert's second pick, 14-1. Kaz's Beach, 20-1. Microscope, 25-1. Thorny Tail, 9-2 favorite. He's fourth. The first pick in this, Durkin's Call, after Tom Durkin, he's 5-1. Prince of Pharaohs, 7-1. Nicky the Vest making his triumphant returns. The whole reason we're doing this damn thing is 6-5, the number 7 horse.
Wow.
And number 8 horse, Troubleshooter, is 5-1. So there you go. Send those picks in, 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line.
Maybe I should go with Durkin just because I'm trying to make this move into the broadcasting world.
That's true. That's true.
Why don't I do that?
Speaking of, we're talking soccer. Now, you're the voice of the boys in purple.
Yeah, so. I got a game tomorrow night. Saturday night. It's a big one, my friend.
Yes. I was there for the Eastern Conference semifinal game against Charlotte this past weekend. I was very nervous because Jeanette came and she's been a thorn in the side of the boys in purple.
Jeez, she's
all
a bad
season
luck
long.
Charm. She erased the bad juju, though. I like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. See, I've said this that I hate to say it this way, but I'm going to. She brings bad Jew energy. She's Jewish. She's of the tribe. One of my dear friends, fellow UofL hockey alum Jake Nowry, who is angling very hard to get on the air with his buddy Tommy to do a gambling segment, but I only have a 20-second delay, so I'm not sure. Well, maybe we could work something out. I don't know. But he brings good Jew energy. And the two of them, oftentimes, when they're both in the arena, the fabulous Lynn Family Stadium, they tend to offset one another.
Okay.
So there's been, anytime they've been together, there's been a draw.
What about, what's your Italian energy?
See, that's the thing. I don't know. Here's the thing.
It's a mixed bag.
Here's the thing about me, Jeff, this might come as a shock to you, but I underperform often.
Okay.
But until it comes to the postseason, I'm that guy that when it comes to the postseason,
he's that dude.
Yeah, your buddy can shine sometimes.
Slang that wood.
Absolutely. So I feel like we were breaking even with the Jew energy there. And
I'm real uncomfortable with how frequently you've said that phrase over the last 10 minutes. Real uncomfortable. Real uncomfortable.
My Paisan postseason energy, I think, was just enough to fuel Cam Lancaster. Yeah, absolutely.
89th minute winner on the penalty spot. It's the only game I've missed all season. We were out at a wedding, and my wife at this point looks like she's about to pop. We're about 2 months out from the due date.
And, yay, baby Greer.
It was the last chance to really go anywhere before she was. She's not supposed to be flying in about 2 weeks from now, so we wanted to go. One of her best friends was getting married, but we missed it, so I had to rewatch a bunch of games once I got back on Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday morning. But it is the seventh straight season that Louisville City FC is back in the Eastern Conference Finals of the USL Championship Playoffs. The boys in purple will be on the road Saturday night in Tampa to take on the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And it's all right here on ESPN Louisville. I'll be on the call with Casey Whitfield. Pre-game coverage begins at 7:15, kickoff 7:30 right here on ESPN 680, 105.7 and the ESPN Louisville app. And we got Soccer City coming up tonight from 6 to 7 on ESPN 680, 105.7. That's going to be Entz and Casey Whitfield. We've got our friend Benton Newman coming in. Mike Watts, the play-by-play guy, broadcaster extraordinaire, will be a guest on the show. I'm calling in. I've got Louisville men's soccer tonight at 6:30, so I'm going to call in right at 6. We'll have some sound from the NWSL Championship Media Day as well, and it should be a lot of fun for this whole weekend. And, Nick, guess what? I am people keep asking me, wow, you got to travel every weekend. And we actually call this is a peek behind the curtain. We call the road games.
How the sausage is made.
Yeah, how the sausage is made. We call the road games from a studio, watching on a monitor.
A little Remy action, as they call it in the biz.
Yeah, it's been difficult these past two seasons. I don't know that they've ever had the crew travel with them for any of these games. We've gone to Indy a few times and to some local games where you can drive. But for the most part, we've always called the games from here just because the pandemic for the last 2 years that I've been on the radio team, you're not really supposed to be traveling a whole lot, especially last year. But we will be calling the game from Saints over in St. Matthews.
Beautiful.
Which is the official watch party. So if you want to come,
official sponsor
join us
of
there.
Your boys' B-League hockey team, too.
There you go. It's a fun place to watch soccer, and like it's the only place I've been in the city where they host these soccer or Louisville City watch parties, and it's packed, and it's all people in purple, and people get fired up. So it'll be a fun occasion on Saturday night. So
it
I'm
will
looking
most
forward to it.
Certainly be, and hopefully I'm actually off this weekend. I might try to make it down there.
That'd dip in there. I love it.
Absolutely.
Hook me up with some pizza, my man.
Oh, absolutely. You know it. 437-968 UPS jobs text line. It's post time. Third race at Aqueduct. We're doing a V-Stakes.
Let's do it.
Real fast, those odds. The second pick from the experts, Vintage Hollywood, the one horse, 18-1. Kaz's Beach, the two horse, 27-1. Microscope, the three horse, 40-1. Jamie always takes the three horse. Thorny Tail, the four horse, going off at 7-2. The experts' first pick, Tom Durkin, inspired. Durkin's call, 8-1. Prince of Pharaohs, Jose Ortiz on the mount with that one, 9-1. He's the six horse. Nikki the Vest, the whole reason we're doing this, making his triumphant return, the 3-5. He's the seven horse, but not one of the experts' picks. The experts' third pick is the eight horse, Troubleshooter, going off at 9-1. So 437-968 UPS jobs text line. Give us your pick for the V Stakes today. It's fitting that we're doing this because Jeff Greer is coming to you live from the Kentucky Derby Museum. We'll tell you why in a second, just because I'm tap dancing here.
I don't have view of the race, though, Nick. This is not great.
Don't worry. This is a trust fall exercise. And,
are you going to call the race? Is that legal? Is that against the rules?
That
for
would
you to...
be absolutely terrifying and probably end horribly. Mad respect to the guys that do that. No, I have the video
respect
up right now, so we should be good. This is coming from our friends at Twin Spires, and I've got the video feed. Vintage Hollywood, the number one horse, Kaz's Beach, number two, Microscope, number three, Thorny Tail, number four, Durkin's Call, number five, Prince of Pharaohs, number six, Nikki the Vest, how you doing, number seven, and Troubleshooter, number eight. Text those in, 437-9680. They are entering the post as we speak. On the other side of this V-Stakes, we'll do a little Colts action with one Lara Overton.
Is she on the line that right now listening to you tap dance before the race?
No, that would be absolutely terrible radio. I think I'm going to call her during the race, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Splitting your attentions. Wow.
Yeah. It's going to take most of my radio. No, Jeff. No. All of my radio cunning. All right. Let's head out to Aqueduct.
They're off, And Nicky the Vest was off a step slow, is now moving up on the outside as Prince of Pharaohs has the early lead. Thorny Tail is alongside in second. Nicky the Vest not far off of them in third. Vintage Hollywood is down at the rail racing in fourth, and Kaz's Beach in fifth, followed by Microscope in sixth. And it's a half dozen lengths back to Troubleshooter and Durkin's Call as they move up the backstretch. It's Prince of Pharaohs and Thorny Tail. Those two
together
for the lead through a quarter in 23 and 3/5 seconds. And the odds-on favorite, Nicky the Vest, sits off the front runners in third.
Okay, okay.
Vintage Hollywood is down at the rail and racing in fourth. Kaz's Beach in between horses. And then on the outside is a Microscope, five lengths or so. Back to Durkin's Call. Troubleshooter is the trailer. Opening half mile in 46 and 4/5 seconds. It's Thorny Tail leaning here by a half length.
Don't like Thorny
Prince
Tail.
Prince of Pharaohs on the
Do
outside
not like
in second.
Thorny Tail.
Nicky the Vest now asked for more in third. Still 2.5 lengths from the lead. It's
on,
Thorny
Nicky.
Tail and
Nicky
Prince of Pharaohs. They are right together with Nicky the Vest
and
in third.
And a baby, get up.
Kaz's Beach has advanced up into fourth, and a Microscope and Vintage Hollywood as the field comes into the stretch. Three quarters in 111
and 2. Go to the how you
Prince
doing,
of
Jeff?
Pharaohs
how you
narrowly
doing? How you
over
doing?
Thorny Tail. Then Kaz's Beach. Nicky the Vest is in fourth.
Get the money, Nicky.
Pole. It is Prince of Pharaohs.
Come on.
Kaz's Beach. Thorny Tail.
Oh, Nicky's
favorite.
Hey,
Durkin's Call moves
He's
into
struggling.
Fourth. They're coming on for the finish.
God.
Here comes Kaz's Beach on the outside to grab a narrow lead. Kaz's Beach is the winner.
Wow.
Come on,
Kaz's
man.
Beach by a head. Photo for second between Thorny Tail and Durkin's Call.
Well, shoot. I mean, Nicky the Vest was kind of, I mean, it was his first race back. So, you know, you can expect a little bit of rust. It's okay. It's okay, Nicky. We still love you.
That's just disappointing. I mean, that's just disappointing.
No, it definitely is. Also, by the way, I thought I was looking at the screen. I thought I was turning down the pot for the horse race, so we didn't get the analysis, and I accidentally turned your mic off. Sorry about that, Jeff.
Could you hear me yelling the whole time, or was?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it was just just that split second after the race.
I wanted everybody to hear my concerns.
Yeah. So
my grave concerns about our horse.
Yeah, number two, Kaz. He was the winner. So if you had the number two horse, you won our V-Stakes, 437-9680, UPS Jobs text line. Always appreciate that. But we also always appreciate it when our friend Chick Verona Lara Overton of the Colts joins us right here on ESPN 680-1057. Lara, how are you this? Fine. It's kind of actually a decent fall afternoon here in the 502 for once.
It's a decent afternoon in the 317 as well. It is sunny. It's a little cool and crisp, but we will take it. And, hey, while we're on the topic of horses, before we talk of the colt variety, since you guys were doing a horse race, something I learned this morning, did you know that the horse, Giacomo, is named or inspired by Sting's son, who is named Giacomo?
Wow.
I did not know
there
that.
There you go.
Look at that.
I don't know. There was something on. There was some ad for like Sting is performing or doing something, and I was like, I looked up Sting, and yeah, it led me down a Wikipedia rabbit hole well before noon, which I don't ever recommend doing. But yes, that's what I landed on. So it's actually I'm making it useful information. The 15 minutes that I wasted scrolling Sting's wiki bio.
Hey, well, we always appreciate wormholes on the V show. That's for damn sure. My friend is a massive Sting fan. I didn't realize it, but when we went to go see him in Atlanta for the when U of L was in the NCAA championship down there,
yeah,
the Coke Zero like fan fest or whatever. It was a great show, but it got so jam packed. I got a little claustrophobic, but it was still a lot of fun. I'm a big fan of Sting and the Police, but we're also a big fan of Lara, and you can check her out right here on ESPN 680-1057 as part of the Colts broadcast team. This Sunday, Colts at Bills, noon, right here on ESPN 680-1057. Let's get right into it. Bills, number one team in the East. A little bit of a stingy secondary. They absolutely picked apart my poor Jetropolitans last week. Four picks for Hilltopper great Mike White. It was a bit of a rough showing. Carson Wentz been a little up and down this season. How important is it for him to keep it out of the Bills' hands this Sunday?
oh, it's critical, because you know that this Bills defense is going to be very opportunistic, much like the Indianapolis Colts defense will be on the other side. And, you know, one of the ways to be efficient and productive for this offense is just to feed it into the hands of Jonathan Taylor. Don't overcomplicate things. Don't get too cute with it. Don't force plays. And I think that's been the biggest thing for the majority of this season. Carson Wentz has played really well. I think that he has played, much closer to that 2017 Carson Wentz that you hope to see when he was at NFL MVP form than he has in the more recent seasons when he struggled that ultimately led to his benching 1 year ago. But, you know, we've seen some outstanding plays. When I look to third down, that play he made to Michael Pittman Jr. was, just a thing of beauty. He has certainly made some outstanding plays. He has really kept this Colts offense out of trouble in a number of situations. They did have some fits against Jacksonville in that second half last week at Lucas Oil Stadium, but keep in mind the Jags were coming off a win over Buffalo. So it's really interesting that, you know, you had the Colts playing the Jags immediately after a win against Buffalo and then Buffalo immediately following that. So a lot of common things that you can glean maybe from those familiar opponents. The one thing that I would say, too, is yes, you got to run the ball. Take advantage of Jonathan Taylor. He is the best rusher in the league right now with Derrick Henry sidelined with injury. He's set to take over the rushing lead with this game, tied with Henry right now for yardage, but that should be Jonathan Taylor's if everything goes to plan in this game. But the other thing about, you know, Carson Wentz keeping this offense out of trouble and avoiding putting them in those situations where he tends to, you know, sometimes play a little fast and loose when he decides to shovel it or go with the left hand for whatever reason. Offensive line. This offensive line has gotten much healthier over recent weeks. Right. We saw Eric Fisher struggle at times. He's come a long way coming off of the Achilles injury. There's been a little rotation over on the right side because Brayden Smith has battled some things. So it's been Chris Reed and Mark Golinski over there. We're starting to see this offensive line be much more consistent, though, and that is a great thing for Carson Wentz in going up against the Buffalo Bills defense.
She is Chick Verona, Lara Overton of the Colts broadcast. Hear her right here all season long on ESPN 680. We are the Colts affiliate right here in the 502. Staying on the run game, Frank Reich said it was painful today to basically sideline Marlon Mack. Are we going to see him at all the remainder of the season?
That's a great question. And really what comes into play here, and this is something that Coach has gone in depth on, and it becomes very understandable because he was very candid. And Coach Reich is about, this was a tough thing. It was a hard thing for him to have this conversation with Marlon that we're going to make you inactive and we're going to do this, because this locker room has the utmost respect and appreciation for Marlon Mack. It comes down to a few factors. Obviously, you have the hot hand of Jonathan Taylor. There is absolutely no way that you want to take critical touches away from him. Right. Nyheim Hines has a very specific role within this offense as well as your pass catching back, and he switches things up with this offense. He really has that ability to keep defenses on their toes because of how they switch things up, and they will on occasion put Taylor and Hines out there at the same time to try to keep defenses from getting too comfortable. And then you have Deion Jackson, who has a role on special teams. And when you get to your third back for a game, you really have to take in the contributions of special teams. Marlon isn't necessarily a special teams contributor because he never had to be, because he was always the number one guy. So he doesn't necessarily have that same component of the special teams value that becomes necessary when you think about those final few spots that you need to utilize on game day. I do think that there will be situations moving forward where you see Marlon Mack utilized when they have particular matchups which are really going to challenge this run game, and you think about a situation where you might need to, you know, heaven forbid, I mean, Jonathan Taylor get injured. He's not a guy, he's been incredibly durable over his career at Wisconsin since he's been in the league, but if you get to a situation where you're making a playoff push in December, you might need to start thinking about preserving him just a little bit and taking into account that workload that he is carrying, especially with this stretch moving forward. You go Bills, then you host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, then you go on the road to Houston. You have a bye week. You come back from that bye week, and it continues to be a battle from there on out. You have a situation where you're going to fly to Arizona and play the Cardinals, one of the best teams in the NFC, on Christmas Day. You host the Raiders. You host the New England Patriots, who are playing incredibly well. And then you finish up the season at Jacksonville. Those aren't necessarily in the order you will see them. But the final four games of the Indianapolis Colts season are no easy walk to put them into a playoff picture. And we know the hole they dug themselves into being at 1-4 on the season. They've now climbed their way to 5-5. That was well documented in the Hard Knocks premiere last night. So this is a team that knows what they're up against, essentially having to, as close as you can, win out the remainder of the year if you have any chance at putting yourself in that AFC wild card picture. Or you hope and pray that the Tennessee Titans cool off, which I don't see any signs of happening.
That's a good point. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line if you have any questions. I wanted to work this in last week, but I wasn't able to. Like an Ask Lara. If you have any Colts questions, text those in, 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line. Lara Overton of the Colts broadcast. I wanted to segue to the other side of the ball a little bit, and I'm going to get back to that Hard Knocks special that aired last night. We know that the Bills this weekend, we've seen what they sometimes struggle with a little bit on the ground. We saw what happened when Derrick Henry kind of ran roughshod on them. So you definitely, that's a matchup I definitely think that's going to be interesting to watch with Jonathan Taylor and the Bills. But I do think it's a little intriguing to reverse that, because I mean, this is sort of a Bills running by committee, and they added Matt Breida. I mean, they have Devin Singletary, who's, you know, a bit of a passing threat. But it's they've been up and down all season. But we know one thing, that when they can establish a run and they can utilize play action, Josh Allen's really, I mean, that's when he's at his most potent. Is that sort of one of the underrated matchups to watch this Sunday, the Colts defense and actually the running game of the Bills?
Well, and that's what, when you look to the teams that have really killed you with their quarterbacks, I look to Ryan Tannehill in particular, week 3 in Nashville. The Colts had no answer for Ryan Tannehill on the move. He was rolling out. He was just dicing up the edges of the Indianapolis Colts defense. And, you know, kind of looking to a few of those. Even Trevor Lawrence last week, you know, he flexed his athleticism in a few scenarios, and he really tested this defense in critical situations. So where you look to the teams that have had success against the Buffalo Bills, stopping the run, of course, that's going to be, but it is more so containing Josh Allen, keeping him in that well, avoiding him, you know, because what happens with Josh Allen is he will make plays with his feet, but it's not just so much gaining yardage with his feet, it's that he'll gain some yardage or even like get on the move and roll out, and then that gives his receivers time for those explosive plays. I mean, you know, Diggs will be downfield 40, 50-yard gains on you, and that is where we see this Bills dynamic offense gain steam and gain strength, is when they start to pick up those big chunk plays, the explosive plays, and they create those types of opportunities. And with the Indianapolis Colts in particular, with the secondary, they have been so plagued by injury. You have lost your two starting safeties. You have Corey Willis on IR, who I believe available to come back next week. I think he could come back potentially against Tampa Bay.
If not,
it would be that. Yeah, absolutely. You need all your weapons at that point. It's either Tampa Bay or it would be when you go to Houston. I can't exactly remember the designation on his date, but you're down Julian Blackman for the entire year, tore his Achilles in practice. So at this juncture, you're to Anderson Dejo, who absolutely played outstanding last week. A great run-stopping safety, incredibly, incredibly physical guy, great tackler. And then you also have George Odom at the safety position. Then at cornerback,
Xavier Rhodes was injured last week. He did not play. He's been battling a lower leg injury the majority of this season. Rocky Sin has shown great improvement. You have Kenny Moore the second at the nickel position. Now you're also getting TJ Carey back. And he is one of those really versatile pieces that was so valuable for the Colts last season because he can play corner, he can play nickel, he can play safety. So he provides you a lot of depth that these next two opponents are going to drastically test you. Also, guys, I really like Isaiah Rogers in this matchup. He is a young, emerging corner who I think has tons of potential. We've seen it on special teams when he's played in that returner role, but I also think that this could be a situation where, given all the weapons that Buffalo has, you're going to have to keep your defense fresh and keep those guys rotating in and out in order to contain them. But for me, first and foremost, Josh Allen is your, you know, greatest problem. He is going to be, you know, your the biggest kryptonite for this defense if you start allowing him to roll out and, you know, make those plays with his feet that create the opportunities, those explosive plays. To me, that's first and foremost that defense is going to have to attack for. And, you know, you saw Josh Allen on Josh Allen crime when the Jags took the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, it starts up front. And this Colts D-line has consistently in back-to-back weeks gotten after the quarterback. Taylor Stallworth had a career-high two sacks. Hey, the two rookies, really impressive last week. Dio Odengbo coming off of, I mean, he's played in, what, maybe four or five games coming off the Achilles injury. He has a strip sack, forces a fumble to close out the game. Quiddy Pay gets his first career sack. So to see those young edge rushers is really promising to me because this is the time where you need to see those guys playing incredibly confident and getting after, you know, Josh Allen, who is one of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
437-9680 UPS Jobs text line if you want to ask Lara. She's Chick Verona, Lara Overton of the Colts broadcast. You can check her out right here on ESPN 680-1057 all season long. Noon this Sunday. It'll be Colts at Bills right here on ESPN 680-1057. A couple speed round here from the text line, and also they've taken a couple of my questions, and then we'll wrap up with what's Lara eating, because we always get an update on a snack intriguing Lara. But Rodrigo, we have a Rodrigo Blankenship fan. Do we have a health update on him?
So the last we heard from Frank Reich earlier in the week is that, you know, Rodrigo is working back. He's near full strength. He's looking really good, doing tons of work out on the practice field when he's able. But because Michael Badgley has kicked so well for you, I mean, the guy's been perfect in extra points and field goals, they do not want to make a move at this point to elevate Rodrigo off of IR. They are sticking with Michael Badgley, which I think is the smart decision. You know, Rodrigo has won games for you and he's lost games for you. And you'll always say, like, oh, it never comes down to just one play or just one guy. And, you know, no one is ever pointing the finger at Rod. But when you go, I mean, it's hard to not look at the Monday night game in Baltimore, you know, and different situations like that. Now, that was where we learned he was hurt. So, you know, you don't want to fault him entirely. He is a very talented, very capable kicker. But I do think that it would be reckless to make a move right now. I think you need to stick with Badgley until Badgley gives you a reason not to play him. He's earned the right to play. I think you work, you know, let this thing work itself out, figure out what you need to do with Rodrigo, and then, you know, evaluate it when that time comes.
We all miss Rodrigo, I feel like, but right now.
I have a feeling Rodrigo will get his face time on Hard Knocks because he is such an interesting character. He's a phenomenal personality. He's so darn likable. He is a star, so I have a feeling that probably even if he's on IR, you'll get your fix via Hard Knocks.
Well, that translates to this one, and I was going to ask you about this too, and it's a perfect segue. We have a Michael Pittman Jr. fan. Sorry. Maybe we can, if he has another great weekend like he did this past weekend, we'll definitely be asking Lara about it next week. But we have a question here. UPS Jobs text line 437-9680. Ask Lara, do you like Sprite? because that was a prominent part of the Hard Knocks.
No one likes Fright as much as Mia Gabrielle Leonard. She is known as the Mini Maniac, and if you saw that girl, I mean, just housing Sprite in the suite, it's hilarious. She is a riot, and come by it honestly, when you watch Darius and the character that he is, Homegirl was slugging some Sprite. I mean, I like some Sprite every now and then, but I think that Darius, it probably needs to be a little fearful of, like, college age Mia. If that girl is slugging back Sprites like that in the suite, I can only imagine, like, this girl around 21 years old, you know, hitting up the parties, getting after it. She is a riot. Absolutely loved it. I'm a fan of Sprite. I'm more a fan of Diet Coke. That's more my vice. But as a youngster, I would never provide, you know when the kid's going in on the diet drinks. So I endorse the young Colts kids, the up-and-coming young Colts for the Sprite for sure.
Well, that's a perfect segue as we wrap up with Lara Overton. Hear her in the Colts broadcast noon this Sunday as they take on the Bills right here on ESPN 680-1057. We wrap up every time. What's Lara's snack of the week?
All right. I told you guys before, you know, I'm not major overly pumpkin person. We talked about the pumpkin muffin from Starbucks, but we have this wonderful staff at the Colts, our cafeteria, our dining staff, and a nutritionist and everyone. And they recently rolled out pumpkin whoopie pies.
Whoa.
And it has been my vice of late.
Yes.
I would say go to, I don't have a recipe that I can provide like I did with my, you know, hot apple dams a couple weeks ago or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
But I would say Pinterest, any of those things, you can easily. Pumpkin whoopie pies, a perfect suggestion for your upcoming Friendsgiving or to provide something a little different, because I'm not a big pie person. Like, I'm not big on a pie, but a whoopie pie, okay, so game changer, because you get the icing in there, really good ratio of like an icing to a fluffy cake. I think that'll be a hit, you know, something to enjoy in accompaniment to all of the other delicacies that you have at your Thanksgiving spread.
Well, I might have to work that in, because I do have two Friendsgivings this upcoming weekend. We were going to use Hot Apple Dan as one of them, but might have
I want a full review.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Chick Verona, Lara Overton, always appreciate the time. If you have any Friendsgivings upcoming, I hope they are full of delicious snacks and pumpkin whoopies and friendship and everything like that. But Lara, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Hey, always appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend. If I don't get to talk to you, you know, next week, have a happy Thanksgiving too.
Right back at you. Thanks so much, Lara. Lara Overton of the Colts broadcast. You can hear her noon this Sunday. Bills and Colts, ESPN 680-1057. Let's take a quick break here, Jeff Greer, because we got to get Brett McMurphy of Stadium on the other side. It's the V Show on a Thursday with Jeff Greer out at Churchill Downs and yours truly, Nick Valvano, back at the studio. Brett McMurphy coming up next.
Listening to the V Show on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, in for Bob Valvano, it's Jeff Greer.
All right, we are back here on the V Show on ESPN 680, and we are rolling right along. We got Brett McMurphy joining us here to talk a little college football, headed into another big weekend in the sport as we get closer and closer to the end of the season. Brett, how are you?
Good to be back to you guys.
Absolutely. Well, let's start first with the local teams here. Kentucky obviously got off to such a great start, trying to finish the season strong. And they are possibly looking at maybe a New Year's Bowl, a January 1st Bowl, somewhere in there, one of the bigger ones. What have you made of their season trajectory from where they were going into that Georgia game to where they are now? What do you think is in their at least near future for them?
Well, obviously, you know, it got off to the great start, the undefeated start, 6-0, And, you know, the Georgia loss, you know, is nothing, I think, to really hurt them as far as, you know, nationally or how they were perceived or anything. Actually, you know, at that point, they may have been the only school to get 13 points on Georgia. And, of course, scored that last-second touchdown that was significant to some. But obviously, you know, after that, the consecutive losses to Mississippi State and Tennessee, I think, you know, after that Georgia game, I thought they were pretty much locked into a New Year's Six Bowl, potentially the Sugar Bowl. But I think those back-to-back losses against Mississippi State and Tennessee probably knocked them out of a New Year's Six game. They're going to need some help, I think, to get back into that realm. But you know, it's you know, potentially another double digit win season if Kentucky wins their bowl game, which is, you know, a lot better than some other SEC East teams, namely Florida.
No question. I do think that it's going to be a really interesting rivalry game with Louisville. Louisville coming off of a strong win against a Syracuse squad that, look, they're not terrible. They got good running back play. They've got a nice quarterback that they've found in the Mississippi State transfer, Garrett Schrader. And Louisville looked really, really good against them in a weird ACC season. They've been able to rip off some wins here and stay at 500. What do you make of Scott Satterfield's time in Louisville? And do you feel like at 5-5 they should beat Duke tonight? It's a rivalry game, the last game of the season, so they're probably on their way to a bowl game of some type. Do you feel like that is good enough, I guess, for year three for Scott Satterfield?
Well, I mean, probably everyone listening to this call could make that analogy. I think it was imperative to get to a bowl game after going 4-7 last year. You know, look, the Clemson game, you know, Louisville should have won that game. That was a fluke. But bottom line is, people don't, you know, at the end of the year, they'll say, well, you were 7-5, you were 6-6. They're not going to say, well, we should have been 8-4. We should have been 9-3. But I think, they can win. Obviously, they should win tonight at Duke. They're big favorites. And then the Kentucky game, you know, that's going to be fascinating because I think Louisville has more to gain from that game than Kentucky does. You know, I would think Kentucky would be a small favorite. I'm not sure. It may be a toss-up. But I think it would do more for Louisville's program to win that game and then have momentum and win a bowl game. And then, you know, suddenly you go from a season that was at 4-5 and potentially finishing out with four consecutive wins, and now you're at 8-5. 8-5 is a whole lot different than 6-7, and that, you know, I think that could build some momentum going into next year. And anything that we've learned about the ACC, especially this year with the drop off of Clemson, is that any team, any time, can put together a magical year and compete for the league championship. You know, just look at what Wake Forest has done this year. Look at what Pitt's doing. So I think that's the good news as far as the future of the Bill.
We're talking with Brett McMurphy from Action Network. And Brett, let's shift gears then a little bit before we get into a little playoff talk. I got to say, it was possibly the most college football headline that I've ever seen of all time. It was a Clarion Ledger. This is the exact headline here. I'm curious for your thoughts on it. Nevin Shapiro claims Ole Miss coach Lane Kiffin is top candidate to become next Miami football coach. That is so college football that my head almost fell off of my neck reading that. But what do you make of sort of the smoke that is, it's not just that that headline. There's been a lot of talk about Lane and his future, a lot of talk about that Miami job, which still has some clout in college football. What do you make of some of these rumors that are flying involving some of these big-time jobs that are out there?
Well, I mean, Nevin Shapiro, you know, he makes great copy, but do you really think that anyone at Miami is discussing with him who the next coach is going to be?
Well, that's a great point.
I really wish I remember who said this, because it rings so true, but nobody cares. They just want to hear names. They want to hear speculation, but basically the saying is, Those that know don't talk, and those that talk don't know. So when you see all these names out there, yeah, it makes sense. You can speculate this guy's going to go here. LSU's going to go after Tucker, going to go after Lincoln Riley, going to go after Jimbo. You know, yeah, you can say that, but no one knows 100% whether that's happening. So, yeah, Kiffin would be an attractive candidate at Miami. I would argue that he's got an easier path to the college football playoff at Miami than he would trying to beat, go head-to-head with Saban, with LSU, with Georgia in the East. So, yeah, but again, personal preference, what does Kiffin want to do? Is that what Kiffin wants to do? Does he want to stay at Ole Miss? Would he prefer to go to maybe another job? That's the biggest unknown when everyone's throwing around all these names for guys jumping to different jobs. Is what does that actual coach want to do? Matt Campbell has been linked to a lot of jobs. A lot of people think that he's a Midwestern type of guy, kind of like Luke Fickell. Will they consider USC? I mean, that's a lot of stuff that goes into it. But yeah, it's certainly the crazy season right now, and we've had 12 openings, including three that have been filled. And I think on my podcast earlier this week for the Action Network, I said the over under was 25.5, and I think we're going to sail over that number because you're going to have existing head coaches fill some of these openings, and then those will lead to more openings. But yeah, the crazy season has got crazier and earlier with the earlier signing period.
Yeah, and I feel like Lane is always going to get headlines just because he's Lane Kiffin. I do want to ask you one other thing about the coaching side of stuff. I mean, the LSU job is one of those plum jobs. Everybody seems to be in the same mindset that they're going to try to go after Jimbo Fisher and probably already have at least tried to make overtures there. How do you see that playing out? And there's always such a wild card status with LSU that things could just go crazy with how many different people have their hands in the pot.
Well, I mean, Jimbo has been very adamant and very, crystal clear that he is not going to LSU. Now, that doesn't mean that Scott Woodward is not going to stop trying to get him to change his mind. But, all you can do is take Jimbo at his word. So I don't think he'll go to LSU. Mel Tucker's got a new deal. Not official yet, but he's got a new deal at Michigan State. So obviously, LSU was looking at Mel Tucker. Where does LSU go next? There's been speculation, I don't even want to call it reports, but speculation about Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma. If you're Lincoln Riley and you're at Oklahoma, you can coach there the next 20 years, and they'll probably build a statue for you. You go to LSU, you win a national championship, they may fire you 2 years later. And also you're going to be competing in the same conference now, so maybe you're going to be able to recruit a higher caliber athlete at Oklahoma that you couldn't while you were in the Big 12. So I don't know if you're Lincoln Riley if you make that move. If you don't, if Woodward can't get Lincoln Riley, where does he go next? I mean, you look at his history. He hired Jimbo at Texas A&M. He hired Chris Peterson at Washington. He has made some big-time and very good hires at his previous stops as athletic director. But now you're kind of working down the food chain. How much further does he have to go until he can find somebody? Can he get a Matt Campbell? Can he get a Luke Fickell? The thing is, whoever he gets, I know this is cliche and boring, but we won't know for a few years if the guy's going to be successful, because I guarantee everybody on the planet said Scott Frost was an A-plus hire when Nebraska hired him, including me. But you know what? 4 years later, he's the first coach in 60 years to have four consecutive losing seasons at Nebraska. So, as much as we think we know who's going to succeed and who's not going to succeed, you really don't know until a guy has a few years to kind of see how things play out.
Unbelievable. I mean, that is so true. It does take time, and it does seem like these coaching hires, everyone's trying to capture lightning in a bottle, and it's the carousel has sped up so much these last couple of years. We're talking with Brett McMurphy. You can follow him on Twitter at @Brett_McMurphy. If you follow college football, you're already following him. Brett, last thing then, tell us about this college football playoff field right now. Is there, it seems like it's always pretty much the same. same teams, but do you feel like maybe Cincinnati can sneak in there? They obviously need some dominoes to fall elsewhere if they want to get into that top four.
You know, I actually think, first off, I don't think Cincinnati should be in the playoff. I don't think they're a top four team. They've beaten two teams so far that have winning records. They beat five teams with three wins or fewer. They do have the win against Notre Dame. Their other Power Five win is against an Indiana team that could go 2-10. That resume simply does not match up with probably 10 or 11 of the best teams in the Power Five ranks. However, I actually think Cincinnati could get into the playoff because I think Georgia is ultimately going to beat Alabama. I think Ohio State will win the Big Ten. Look, I'm an Oklahoma State grad, but I've seen this movie a million times. If Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma in the regular season finale, there will be a rematch for the Big 12 title game. I guarantee Oklahoma State will lose that game. So that knocks out the Big 12. Utah and Oregon are gonna split their two meetings. That's going to knock out the Pac-12. So then somehow, some way, I think Cincinnati makes it into the playoff. Who that fourth team is, maybe Alabama with two losses at that point. Who knows? But I do think if Cincinnati runs the table, they still have SMU, which could give them a challenge. They still have Houston in the American title game. They could give them a challenge. But I do think Cincinnati will get in unless Oregon and Oklahoma State both run the table, which I don't think would happen.
All right. Well, I am absolutely amped to see how the rest of this thing plays out, Brett. I think it's been a really fun season, and obviously we want to see if Georgia is the last team standing at the end of all of this, as we all expect them to be at this point in the season. He is Brett McMurphy. Brett, thank you so much for some of your time today. Oh, we got to ask, before we go, Brett, I got to ask, any chance, yeah. I can't believe I forgot about this, any chance that familiar name for folks here in Louisville, one Tom Jurich, any chance that we see his name come up for any AD jobs, possibly one in Coral Gables?
I think he's among the candidates that are being considered from people that I've talked to. You know, ultimately, Miami's got to make that decision. I know Gino Toretta, you know, Heisman Trophy winner for Miami, who is very much wants that job. He's never been an AD, so I don't know Miami's philosophy, if they want someone with AD experience or they want somebody with Miami ties. But, I think Jurich is among the candidates that they are considering. Would they be attractive to Jurich? We'll have to see. I mean, I know he's had some offers in the past since he left Louisville. I don't think any of those were attractive to him. That's why he didn't take any of those jobs. Maybe Miami's a little bit different. You know, he's currently, splitting his time in Clearwater, Florida, and in Colorado. And so maybe he remains in Florida. But, you look at his track record of who he hired at Louisville with Patino, Bobby Petrino, obviously Charlie Strong, a lot of successful coaches. So will Miami want to go that direction? We'll have to wait and see. But I think whatever Miami does, I would expect something to happen fairly quickly if they're going to try to have the new AD make the new hire, if or when they get rid of Manny Diaz.
Wow. I mean, a lot to play out, but that is fascinating, especially if he's back in the ACC. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Brett. We appreciate your time, and we'll be catching up with you again here soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, that's Brett McMurphy from the Action Network. And Nick reminded me there. Jurich's name has come up, and I'm glad we got that in there because, holy crap, that would be a haymaker in the ACC if Tom Jurich was back in the AD ranks. Although I will say,
my goodness,
it is a little funny to say since he left Louisville. That's not exactly how things went down. I wouldn't say he left Louisville, but regardless, we'll see how things shake out with Miami. That would be just a monster haymaker in the ACC for Louisville fans. Plenty of fodder. The message boards, oh my God, I can't imagine the message boards after that.
Maven and Rummage have already said that they're going to become 93.9 the Cane.
93.9 the Canes. Well, I mean, that's maybe they'll get some Canes gear. They're fans of all the teams all around the world anyway. They don't have any regional loyalties as it is. So maybe they'll be Miami fans too. We'll see. But anyway, we'll take a break here. Final hour coming up on the V Show on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.